Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 62 for November 18th, 2009. So long, App Store. All right, it is time for the iPhone Alley Podcast, that show that discusses all things iPhone, iPod Touch, App Store, all that fun stuff. Tonight with me,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I honestly don't know what I'm talking about, but that's not really a surprise to our listeners, I don't think. With me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Hey, as always, it's great to be here, so thanks for having me on.
Great to have you. And Adam Christensen is here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Fantastic. How are you?
Good. It's Tuesday.
Yes, it is Tuesday. It's Tuesday night, and we had to move things around because everybody's schedules got a little mixed up, because we wanted to make sure we got a special guest on. Paul Kafasis from Rogue Amoeba is here. Hello, Paul.
Kafasis. Good enough. It always happens. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. I wasn't sure how to pronounce it until Ken Ray, who was planning on being on, but he couldn't, unfortunately. But I heard him talk about the story on his show, and I assumed he knew more. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm blaming Ken.
Sounds fair.
Paul, at least you didn't have to hear Michael trying to learn how to pronounce Paul before the show.
That was really hard. Jeff helped me through that, though. So yeah. Let's move right to the meat of this discussion. The first story, the big story from last week, is that Facebook's iPhone app developer, the guy who is the primary developer on that project over at Facebook, one man show kind of thing, he decided he's done developing for the iPhone entirely, and he talked to TechCrunch about that after his announcement on Twitter, and he essentially said that the biggest issue he had was that he had to deal with Apple in the app review process. And developing for the iPhone is fine if you're not worrying about Apple, and of course you have to. And so I think it was the next day, right after that, Paul, that you wrote a big lengthy story on the Rogue Amoeba blog about your experience with the review process. You want to talk about that?
We posted, I think it was the next day. It was on Friday the 13th. Basically about the ordeal we had. It was about 3.5 months worth of trying to get a bug fix for one of our applications on the iPhone published and get it out through the store. And this, it didn't really have anything to do with what Joe Hewitt was saying, it wasn't related to it, rather. But it very much echoed some of the things that he had said, and just detailed our frustrations in terms of dealing with the App Store and dealing with the review process that exists currently.
Yeah. So it was it was a very minor update that you submitted. Didn't really change anything on the surface, right? And then so right away they came back. And said, was it right away that they came back and said that you had an Apple?
So we submitted back in, I can do a quick timeline, hopefully.
Yeah,
submitted back in July, and after about a week, we got a rejection, and it just indicated trademark issues, basically. And we didn't quite know what they were talking about. And we looked at the application, and there were a couple places where we used some Apple images coming from your Mac. This is an application that receives audio from your Mac on your iPhone, basically. And we were sending an image of the machine itself. So if you're on a MacBook Pro, it showed an image of the MacBook Pro. And we were sending the application icon for the application that you're pulling audio from. So if you want to send audio from Pandora playing in Safari over to your iPhone, we would show a picture of your Mac, so show a picture of the MacBook Pro, and then badge it with the Safari icon. And the idea was just to, reinforce what you're doing and make it clear, you're pulling audio from your MacBook, and it's playing audio in Safari right now. And Apple, objected to this usage. And so over the next couple months, we went back and forth. We initially just submitted again as it was and hoped that this was, the rejection had been incorrect and it was just a naive reviewer doing something wrong. And a couple weeks later, it was rejected again. at which point we emailed into, there's an address that sort of gets you around the review process a little bit and lets you, the way we looked at it was talking to a real person as opposed to the sort of black box of the review process. And had a back and forth for another, again, I'd have to look at the numbers exactly or the dates exactly, but for another two and a half months of back and forth on whether this was going to be allowed or not. And ultimately at the sometime in the middle of October, it was clear to us that we weren't going to get this through no matter what arguments we made and no matter what arguments we put forth. And at that point we had to figure out just how to remove this functionality and still get the app shipped with this bug fix. But yeah, it was something where the 1.0 version of this application shipped with this functionality and showed these images coming from your Mac. And we had a bug fix that changed nothing in terms of the visible functionality or visible interface. And that's what got held up. And then we had to deal with this process for almost 4 months before we were finally able to ship with the bug fix, but without the functionality that we wanted.
Yeah. And so I think what you replaced it with was a with an image that said something about the EFF, right?
Yeah, so we struggled with this because this was functionality that we felt our users, you know, was useful for our users, and effectively we had to trade a feature for a bug fix, and that's as a developer that's just so galling because you know this is our product, and this the trademark issues here are, you know, shaky at best. And I think this certainly is not something Apple would ever sue over. So the fact that the only reason that they bothered with it is the fact that they have the control that they do in the App Store as, you know, the exclusive means of distribution of software for the iPhone. So we knew we had to rip this artwork out, and we replaced it with an image of the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, their logo. And if you tap that in the application, it links you to a page basically explaining what happened and explaining why the functionality that we had in there is gone. And the link to the EFF is just sort of, if people don't know, the EFF is a foundation that fights for rights in the digital age. So they've taken on AT&T for their wiretapping and fought for things like TiVo and just basically digital rights and consumer rights in the digital age. So it's not, you know, it's not, you know, donate money to the EFF and they're going to go after Apple, but they're certainly the organization that would be on the side of the consumer and on the side of what we feel is right here.
Right. Yes. And so essentially you guys, you're completely finished with pushing any updates for Airfoil?
Well, so Airfoil on the Mac is certainly alive and well, and also our Windows version. The Airfoil speakers touch for the iPhone.
Yes.
This update went through, and right now, you know, the way the App Store is, we're not interested in developing any new software, and updates for what we have on there will at least be rare. We aren't going to be devoting time to the iPhone is basically what it comes down to.
Right.
It's not a hard and fast, you know, we're throwing out our own iPhones and we're done for good, but it's something where the situation and the environment there is just we don't feel it makes good business sense to be developing there for us.
Sure.
And that has a lot to do with you know what we talked about just a second ago in terms of the App Store and the review process.
Right. And so I think that the quite a few applications, and I think it was just today or yesterday that RSS Player, an application we had talked about a lot in the past, has also been rejected, the 2.0 version, because it showed an image of an iPhone.
Right. And we've seen this, you know, we've seen this with a lot of different rejections where an application has an image that looks like an iPhone or it has an image that is an iPhone. And Apple has been very sort of protective of this. And it doesn't really, you know, make sense from a common sense perspective, because the way these things are being used is to indicate the device that's in your hand. It's not trading on Apple's mark. It's not, you know, misusing it or misrepresenting anything. It's not designed to make the user think that this software came from Apple. It's just designed to let them understand how things work. So, you know, if you need to tilt your iPhone to do something, you show an image of an iPhone being tilted. And, you know, it's just fairly straightforward usage of these things. And thus far, Apple has been very restrictive in terms of how this can be used and has rejected things for it.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of big, you know, aside from Facebook and you guys are longtime Mac developers, and you have fantastic applications, especially the Audio Hijack Pro, which we use regularly on the show, and I'm sure Adam uses it and Jeff uses it, and you know it's great stuff. And you know, we've seen the original big player with issues with the approval process was, you know, of course, Google, and the FCC got involved in that, and we haven't seen much else come out of that. And I'm just, you know, after seeing Facebook and then you guys declaring that, well, I don't think Facebook is done. It's just the developer at Facebook.
Just the developer, yeah.
But still, I feel like, you know, this is a very good thing for the community, because Apple has power to to make sure applications aren't malicious, that they're not doing anything that isn't good for the consumer, and that the applications actually work. And that's about where I feel, and I'm sure a lot of other people feel like that's where Apple should stop and say, all right, it's an application, it works, and go. Now, what is your opinion on this? Ideally, would you rather that Apple didn't look at the applications at all and just allowed everything to go into the App Store, or change their policies to be, more accepting of stuff? How do you feel about that?
I talked about this. I blogged about the iPhone quite a bit last year for O'Reilly, and I had an article that I still look at once in a while because it's something that I wrote and I was pretty proud of. It was basically the title of the article is one little article, and the idea was the difference between the App Store and an App Store, and that little article, the or an. And to me, the idea of Apple having an App Store is great. The App Store has obviously been phenomenal. There's 100,000 applications in there. There's billions of downloads at this point. A lot of companies are making good money from it. And it's, a fantastic way to deliver software to the consumer. But the idea of it being the App Store and the exclusive way of delivering software to the consumer has always, from day one, struck me as the wrong way for this to work. So I think, in answer to your question, the ideal world for me would be Apple has their App Store and has a review process, and it can be far more strict than it is right now. If they, find anything objectionable in your software, they can say, hey, don't include it. But at the same time, there's alternate app stores and alternate ways of getting software onto the device where, you can download an application and sync it some other way instead of just downloading it from the App Store. And to me, that's, that's how platforms have worked for decades. The Mac and Windows, you can download any software you want. And, when Palm Pilots came out, you could install software, yourself, and you'd download it and install it manually. And to me, that's sort of the best possible scenario. I don't know if we'll see it, and I don't know, how likely it is, but in that scenario, Apple has the control and can say, hey, if you want to be secure in, what you're using and know that it's good software and approved, come through the App Store. And if you're willing to take a chance, then, install it on your own and we'll, we'll allow that, but it's on you. That to me is, the right way to do this, the best way to do it. The difficulty is that, they're making millions and millions of dollars from the App Store. And how do you say, hey, you'd make, 1% more in terms of iPhone sales, say, if it was open and if developers could do these things that maybe you don't necessarily approve of or AT&T doesn't necessarily approve of, but it would make your customers happy in the end. It's sort of a difficult argument to pitch when, things are pretty great, especially for Apple, as they are right now.
Do you feel like having allowing outside of applications would compromise security? Because I feel like one of the arguments Apple could use is that, well, all the applications on the store are signed, and allowing, would you have to allow unsigned applications on the iPhone to run if they adopted that kind of model?
Well, I mean, it sort of depends on what type of security you're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about network security or device security or data security, it's sort of illusory. It's not really there. Apple's not doing source code checks. They don't know what these applications are actually capable of doing. They run the application and they put it through its paces, basically. But if you, I mean, the simplest example is that you write an application and it gets pretty popular and it's on 100,000 iPhones. And you've got some code in there that only executes 6 months down the line. And that could be any sort of malicious code you wanted that could do anything that you wanted. And the review process as it stands right now would not do anything to prevent that.
Right.
That software would have been approved and it would be on those phones. And then what? I mean, so the idea that there's sort of a security aspect to this review process has always struck me as sort of a false argument, because they're not doing source code checks. And even if they were, you know, when you look at source code, it's not clear what things are, what's being done in that source code. So it's something where you can't really assure your customers of that security. And I don't think you need to. I mean, I think, look at the Mac, look at Windows. I mean, there certainly are plenty of security problems on Windows and even on the Mac, but overall the system works. And so I think arguing that, you know, the App Store review process is enhancing security for customers is not really an honest or a correct way of looking at it.
Doesn't the iPhone only accept applications that have been signed by Apple's, I'm not really sure how
their signing works. Authority.
Their signing authority, yeah.
Right. So, and because of that, they can prevent applications from running after the fact. I believe that's part of how there's supposedly at least a kill switch that they can turn an application off even after it's been approved, which has to this point never been used.
Right.
And I think that ties into it. But again, it's something where, all right, so you look at all these phones that are jailbroken. There's got to be, I don't know, there's tens of millions of phones and iPods out there, iPod touches, and there's got to be probably a million jailbroken phones out there. There's some number that's in the tens or hundreds of thousands, and all those are running any software that the user wants and that's not signed by Apple and that's not approved. And there have been, you know, some small issues with security and things like that, but that's something that these people, these users who are willing to jailbreak their phone, are taking on, and it's something where it's a fairly technical thing to do right now. But again, it's something where the level of security provided is not really worth much, and the freedom that's lost, I think, is worth a whole lot.
Well, I guess it isn't really much of any security at all, because you just apply for the signature or for the certificate, and you know it goes on the phone. Ta-da! You know, they haven't looked at the code, they haven't vetted it or anything like that, and that's why ad hoc applications work. But then again, that's also why you have to do an ad hoc provisioning, right? Because you have to have that certificate either from the iTunes store when you purchase it, or, you know, via the ad hoc process. So it really, I think, you know, you make me realize that it's kind of a false sense of security.
Well, right. But I think, again, look to your Mac and realize, you know, do you worry about security on your Mac every day? I certainly don't. I mean, I take some basic precautions. My router's set up to not allow, you know, incoming queries and connections. But beyond that, it's not something that I'm worried about.
Sure.
And I think I'd like to have the same freedom with, you know, an iPhone that I paid for and that, you know, is my device.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And the idea of having an app store, but also having the ability to install apps independently of an app store makes a lot of sense. And of course, you know, developers who, wouldn't sign up for the app store or put their apps there, obviously wouldn't get the benefit of Fair Play DRM, which I guess is, you know, that's really not worth anything, because clearly
that's
people
been
can
cracked, yeah.
But you know, you obviously get the easy process of, okay, you know, someone can buy it right there, and they only they already have an iTunes account. They don't have to go, you know, sign up for anything else on your site, or do a PayPal, or, you know, you don't have to worry about that kind of issue. So there are a few benefits for that, but you know, otherwise it doesn't, you know, there aren't that many reasons for this not to work. And you also, you know, with an app store, Apple can say, well, look, you know, these applications have gone through our approval process. And so there's a higher chance of them not being as malicious as, you know, something else potentially could be. And there's also this other story that just came out that Apple is now filtering app submissions, automatically deciding whether or not they're using private APIs. Now, I know developers use private APIs all the time on the Mac, and you know, it's not necessarily a proper thing to do. It's not malicious in any way, but you know, it's you know, Apple's APIs, and they can change them at any time. They're not, you know, guaranteeing developers that they're not going to change. And is this? I mean, how do you feel about Apple doing stuff like that even? Is it necessary? Or, I mean, who cares? You know, if it breaks,
well,
it breaks.
Well, I mean, so the idea of not using private APIs on the Mac, it's done, but it's discouraged is probably the best word. Apple discourages the use of private APIs, and if you do it, your software is liable to break. You know, an OS update could change the way that private API works. It's a private API, you know, basically just some functionality that's part of the system. And if you want to take advantage of it, you can if you can figure it out. It's private versus public because they don't explain how to take advantage of it. So the idea is they haven't made it public because they don't want you touching it and using it, or because it may change. So on the Mac side, you're taking a risk if you do that. But, you know, you as a businessman or as a developer can decide to take that risk and can say, you know, we feel this is worth it and we don't think it's going to break, and that's not a problem. On the iPhone side, because of the control that Apple has, they can say, no, you're not allowed to do it, period. And if you do, your application won't get approved. As far as the actual checks, I mean, all it is strengthening the way that the rule already existed. The rule existed that said you cannot use private APIs.
Right.
And the problem with it was that things looked like private APIs when they weren't and were getting rejected incorrectly. A good example of this was applications that had a CoverFlow-like implementation, a clone of CoverFlow, basically. A couple applications got rejected for this as using private APIs when, in fact, they had coded this themselves from scratch. And so the approval process there was sort of broken and wasn't working properly. With a tool like this, you know, running the applications just through an analysis tool to look for these calls, you know, all it does is make the process work the way that it should have on those applications. So those applications that were incorrectly getting rejected would pass through this tool now, and those that got through somehow are now going to get rejected, which will certainly be an issue. There's no doubt that in those 100,000 applications, there's some that got accepted that shouldn't have, and now in the future will get rejected. But those were applications that, you know, skirted the review process basically, or you know, got through it incorrectly. So the tool itself doesn't bother me. It's still, I mean, it goes back to the bigger idea of should there be a review process, because is this prohibition on private API calls really benefiting the customer? I mean, the argument for prohibiting it is that software will break otherwise when they update the iPhone. But, you know, that's sort of a given fact of life with any sort of third-party software. So
sure.
I don't know that the prohibition itself is really that beneficial, but the use of the tool to enforce that prohibition doesn't really bother me.
Sure. Now, and Jeff and Adam, you guys are free to jump in and ask any questions that you want. I have, I'm wondering though, if applications on the iPhone, if it's not jailbroken, do they have access to the system or outside of the app sandbox that you're given?
In terms of, you know, data access, or when you're running an application just the way that Apple wants you to, you don't really have access to anything outside of your own sandbox. Yeah.
Okay. So the way that, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, guys like Quick, they can pull, you know, video from the camera in a way that isn't traditional, isn't using the picture taker, and, you know, they're sending it out over 3G. I'm not sure how much of what they're doing is outside of, you know, the normal APIs of what Apple allows for a developer, and, you know, why they wouldn't be allowed to submit their app to the App Store. But I guess what I'm getting to is if we did have a situation where developers could send out applications outside of the App Store, could those applications get more, you know, root level access to the OS and potentially hurt something? Or does that require, you know, the same kind of, you know how you have to type in a password on your Mac?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's certainly different ways to design the system. I think you can certainly design it in such a way that you still have some controls over this software, over what's installed on the iPhone. Not over what can be installed, but once something is installed, you can certainly design the operating system itself, and it is designed to not allow those applications to touch other data. I think, yeah, the biggest issue with, you know, allowing software outside of the App Store is that, yeah, you would have software that could get additional access. But again, like you just said, on the Mac, you require a password for that, and it becomes a more technical device, you know, more for a technically minded person when you do that. But again, it's about having the option. I mean, you can dumb down your Mac as much as you want to, and turn it into a fairly simple, almost consumer device versus a personal computer. And this, we just sort of want to have the opposite. We want to turn this consumer device of a phone into more of a handheld computer. The power is there. The hardware is certainly capable of doing that, but thus far it's been sort of locked down and created. They've sort of created these artificial constraints on the device itself that, you know, don't necessarily have to be there.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I have a question for you about the whole API thing. And in your post that you put on your website, you talked about how you were using Apple's approved APIs to call all the images that are showing up on the iPhone.
Yep.
But then Apple turns around and says, you can't do that. So not being a programmer, I'm looking at that going, what the hell?
Right. So the issue, so on the Mac side, we're using two function calls, NS image name computer and icon for file. Basically just two calls that pull the computer, an image of the computer itself. So again, if you're on a MacBook Pro, it pulls an image of the MacBook Pro from deep in the bowels of the system. This artwork is buried there. And then another one that pulls the source application's icon. So if you're streaming from Safari, it pulls Safari's icon. And so from a technical perspective, these functions are created by Apple for use by third-party applications on the Mac. And that's what we were using them for. Our Mac-side application uses this artwork and then passes it over to the iPhone or to the iPod Touch. So the restriction that Apple, you know, was saying was that the problem was that we're using trademarked images. Of course, they gave us this access to these trademark images with these functions. So it's not something that they're saying, you know, technically you're not supposed to be doing this in terms of API calls or anything like that. It's for them, I guess it was more of a legal issue, which of course we felt didn't make any sense because they're providing this for us.
So actually, Paul, that's funny that Jeff brought that up because I had a couple questions here kind of related to that. So I was curious. You know, I know in the Airfoil app, I don't think you display these specific icons, but there are specific icons, you know, like the Safari icon, which is part of the default, I think, drop-down menu or the list of applications menu. I think that's provided by the system. You have the little computer icons, and I know if I have a specific model Mac, it shows a little tiny, like 16 by 16 image, I think.
Yep.
Are those your guys' images, or are those images that are coming out of?
No, again, that's all coming from the system. So, I mean, when you launch an application, its icon shows up in your dock. This is just a quick example. And all that is that, you know, the OS is looking at the application and saying, hey, what's your artwork? And then showing that artwork in the dock. And we're doing the same thing inside of Airfoil. We're saying, you know, here's Safari, and we put out the application's name, Safari, type it out. And then here's Safari's little icon so that, you know, you have both a visual, a graphical version of it and the textual version of it. Side by side. So the idea is just to sort of show what you're doing. And yeah, that's all coming right out of the system and just being pulled right out of the system to display there. So it's just coming right from Mac OS X basically.
But is that from the standard Xcode like UI kit that they give you, or are you guys actually pulling those in and assembling that into the list?
No, so that's just being assembled on the fly basically. So, you know, if you have basically part of the idea is that if we embedded any of this, or if we, you know, included it from the get-go, anytime there was an update, we'd have to update that artwork. So the idea is here, it's just pulled on the fly. So, you know, when you open Safari and it shows up in that list, we pull the icon out on the fly. So if the icon ever changes, the new icon will show up there. And same thing with the Mac artwork, with the hardware artwork.
So here's my question. Has Apple ever sent you a cease and desist to say, take those images out of your OS X application?
No, of course. And that's with those two functions I was talking about before are specifically designed to enable you to do this. Right. So the only real disconnect here is that on the Mac, this is fine. And there's literally functions that Apple provides to do this. And on the iPhone, it's not fine. And they're saying that we're specifically prohibited from doing this on the iPhone.
Well, okay, so what I'm getting at is, so the issue seems to be, just to clarify this for everybody, at least in my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, the issue seems to be that you pulled this image out of OS X and passed it over, but you passed it over to the iPhone. So it's that transmission of that image, that trademarked in Apple's, you know, mind, copyrighted image, and sending it to the iPhone. I'm wondering if this same functionality had been built into the iPhone OS and these icons were in the iPhone OS and you had pulled them from there and not transmitted them, do you think Apple would be treating this differently?
Well, I think if they were built in and you were able to pull them, then yeah, obviously it would, you know, it would show that the iPhone was supposed to do this as well. I don't know that it's not necessarily the transmission portion of it that's the issue. I think it's this wasn't very clear. I should clarify. This wasn't
and that's,
clear.
That's kind of the point I'm trying to illustrate here is that, you know, how silly this is in terms of, you know, it's okay you do it over here. And I think this is a point you were trying to make a lot in your post.
Right.
It's like, it's okay if you do it over here, but, oh, man, if you do it on the iPhone, it's a big no-no.
Well, and not only that, but it wasn't as if this was a cut-and-dried thing. I mean, the portion of the agreement that every developer has to sign that they quoted is, you know, we had read that, and it says you can't use the Apple logo or other graphics in connection with websites, products, marketing, blah, 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 except with the permission of Apple, blah, blah, blah. But we are using those legitimately, according to Apple, on the Mac side, and we just wanted to do the same thing on the iPhone. And so, yeah, exactly what you said. Is that it's okay in one place and not okay in another. And beyond that, beyond the fact that it's sort of confusing or sort of odd that it's the same thing in two places and only acceptable in one of them, was that this wasn't a cut and dried thing. It wasn't as if this was very clearly wrong in Apple's mind. You know, it took them some time to come to this decision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't as if they just said, no, here is what you're doing wrong. If you use a private API and they catch you doing it, they can say, look, you're using a private API. We said you can't do that. End of the story. I mean, there's no arguing with that. You're clearly doing something that they said you couldn't. Whereas here it was something that, you know, should have been fine, seemed like it was fine, had been fine for our first release of this.
Right. They had already approved it, yeah, which is
right,
another good
approved
point.
It once, and suddenly was no longer acceptable. So it's something where, yeah, there seems to be just sort of a whole lot of fuzz to it, or a whole lot of, you know, just it's not cut and dried. It's not clear cut. And that's sort of maddening, because we had the whole thing is that we had a bug fix that we wanted to ship. We wanted to improve the software for our users, and we're stuck haggling over whether or not this is acceptable. We can't find a specific prohibition on it. We can't find something that says, here is why it is absolutely not allowed. It is allowed on the Mac side. We're doing this, you know, this was originally functionality that we had made to work with the Apple TV. So when we send audio to the Apple TV, we show this artwork. We show the same artwork much bigger on the screen. And mm-hmm. we've been doing that for a year and a half. Haven't, you know, heard one word from Apple on it that this was ever a problem. And so, you know, to have this a year and a half later and you know, 6 months after we had originally shipped the functionality on the iPhone, to have this come back and bite us was just sort of ridiculous to us, when all we were trying to do was ship a simple bug fix.
Yeah. So the other thing that this leads into, and I don't think we've kind of discussed this, because I think another group of people that's been hit pretty hard by something similar to this, not quite exactly the same, but I know all these apps that have phone dialers in them, you know, like a number pad.
Yep.
Apple seems to be a real stickler about rejecting anything that looks like the iPhone's built-in phone dialer. And a lot of this stuff in terms of UI, for me as a user, you know, I think this goes back to usability. I like my iPhone apps to kind of look and feel and work like my Mac apps and like the built-in iPhone stuff, because it's comfortable, it's familiar, it creates a good, cohesive, consistent experience. And that's something Apple has been known for years and years and years. And it seems like they're taking a different approach with the iPhone. They're saying, oh man, your dialer can't look like our dialer in your third party app, because yeah. you know, that violates our look and feel or our copyright. So I'm just wondering if in the developer community you guys discuss this kind of, it just seems like a disconnect to me from Apple's philosophy in the past, which is, you know, all the UI elements are going to look the same, all the menus are going to be the same. It seems like we're moving further and further away from that, and I don't know if that's a good thing for users, for end users.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's not. I think, you know, consistency in terms of interfaces is key. And when things look a certain way, they should function a certain way. And when things are expected to do something, having them look similar or look, you know, identical is a good thing. So that, you know, if there's a red close button, a red circular button in the upper left of a window, that's always going to close the window. And, right. you know, having that functionality be the same across applications is obviously a good thing. And then, you know, on the other side, you're getting exactly what you said, that things look too similar to what Apple's doing, and therefore they're rejecting it. So it's something where I think that's something where you don't necessarily have the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing, basically. Is yeah. You know, it's not a concentrated decision from the top or anything like that. I think it's just sort of a negative side effect of the size of Apple and the size of the review process, basically.
Yeah,
You'd think they would want an iMac icon to look like an iMac icon to look like an iMac icon from application to application, because you look at it and you go, oh yeah, that's my iMac. I recognize it. And Apple has these gorgeous, you know, images that give you that, like you were saying in your application, you're just trying to give them that visual indicator. Oh yeah, that's my iMac and that's my Mac Mini. And if they make every app developer develop a custom icon for an iMac, every iMac icon is going to look different. And then suddenly it's like, oh, is that the iMac or the, you know, it's just, I don't know. I have a hard time understanding this, as I think you do, which is the whole point.
You don't want to have Paul, you know, do a crayon drawing of an iMac.
Well, that was,
I'd be happy to do them for you.
That was actually, we had a whole bunch of different ideas on just what we could do in terms of, you know, sort of making it clear that this functionality belonged there, and sort of pencil sketches of these application icons was one idea we had. But in the end, it didn't really pan out.
Well, you know, the silly thing about this whole thing is that they're claiming to have the consumer's best interests in mind, and they're kind of going, you know, in reverse of that. What you're describing in your application, that makes a lot of sense, and it tells you exactly what's going on, and it's keeping the iPhone from being consistent, with itself and with the Mac, and it's very interesting. And the thing is, you know, why don't they go after really ugly applications?
Because they use really ugly non-trademarked images, you know? So, but I don't want to get away probably the bigger point that I think we really need to discuss in all this is, and Paul mentioned it several times, is that they were just trying to push out a bug fix.
Yep.
And I think a lot of app developers are more frustrated over this, that even if you had a simple bug fix and you didn't have any issues, you're looking at potentially weeks. You know, it sounds like they did the initial review in about a week, Paul, but I don't know typical. I don't know
it fluctuates. It fluctuates. And it's something that you mentioned when you were talking about Joe Hewitt, and something that we talked about was that on the Mac side, if we discover a bug in one of our applications, if we discover it in the morning, we can ship an update in the afternoon. If we have tested the fix and believe that it works and, you know, trust that it works, we can ship it almost instantly. You know, we create a binary, we put it on our website, and it's available for download instantly. With the way that the review process works now, if we discover a bug and fix it in the morning, at best, we ship it to Apple, and there's a few ways to expedite your review that you can use as sort of a, I don't know what to call it, almost a silver bullet. But at best, you're still looking at 2 to 3 days, and more likely, exactly, 1, 2, 3 weeks. And in that time, even if it gets down to 2 days, that's 48 hours of our customers emailing us and leaving negative reviews and basically just having problems that we don't want them to have because Apple is looking this over. And it's something where, you know, that part of the process is definitely very frustrating because we just want to get our software to our customers and get it in their hands and get it working the way that it should be. And you're always going to have bugs in your software. So, you know, the really facile answer to this is, well, don't write software that has bugs, or, you know, don't have bugs in your software. But, you know, that's obviously not the answer. Right. So assuming that you're always going to have some problems in your software and that, you know, the unforeseen will happen and a bug will crop up, you need a way to get those fixes out there. And on the Mac side, it's instant. And then certainly on the web, if you have a web app, you can update that and it instantly updates for everybody. On the Mac side, on Windows, you have to have them download an update, but it's still, you know, instantly available to them. And on the phone side, it's days or weeks before they get that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we've seen, I don't know how much you guys follow the Twitter clients, but when Twitter had an issue known as the Twitpocalypse, basically that the Twitter clients were no longer loading tweets properly and not working properly. And it was a bug that sort of popped up on everybody. All of a sudden, none of these clients worked, and they had a fix pretty quickly, but to get it in anyone's hands took days. And, you know, that's just no way to try and develop software and no way to run a business, really.
Absolutely. And it also, you know, not only does it hurt on the front end, but also, you know, it keeps developers from doing a lot of broad beta testing, because sure, you can do the, you know, the ad hoc thing, and you have 100, it's still 100, right? You can do 100 ad hoc devices.
It's 100, yeah.
And, but, you know, still that, you know, I've had ad hoc applications sent to me many times, and it doesn't always work because it, you know, for some reason it can't find the provisioning profile.
That it's needs a mess just to get it all set up.
Even. Yeah. I don't even know how that works on the developer's side. So, you know, it also hurts, you know, as far as review copies go, because not only is it a process to go and, you know, get these promo codes, but it doesn't work outside of the US, I believe. And, you know, they brought in promo codes pretty quickly to address this problem, but it really, you know, doesn't solve it completely because you can only get 50.
Right. It's 50 per version, and it took a few months to get there even. And that was something where it really seemed like it's not that the people behind the App Store and the people at Apple are not intelligent, but it's something where they're out of their element and haven't ever done anything like this before. And that makes perfect sense. This is a huge problem space, and they're certainly doing something incredible in terms of software delivery and how easily customers can get software. But as you said, to get a review copy to someone, I know developers in the beginning were buying iTunes gift cards,
yep,
and giving those numbers to review sites. And that's just on the right side of, you know, ethics and things like that. But it's still the wrong way to have to do it, because every time you do it, if they use it to buy your software, and let's assume that all the reviewers did and were honest about it, you still lose 30% to Apple, because that's their cut of those purchases. So if I have a $10 application and I send you a $10 gift card, you buy my software and Apple gets $3 and I get $7. So that review already cost me $3 in hard money. And it's just, you know, obviously no way to do it. And so the promo codes were pretty quickly, as you said, pretty quickly implemented. But it sort of spoke to the naivete or inexperience of how to do this, of how to release third-party software, that Apple just doesn't have this experience and doesn't know all the things that we as developers want to do.
Yeah.
There's still a long list of things that we want to do, from having, you know, discounted upgrades, upgrading from version 1 to version 2. There's no way to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
Coupon codes. If we have someone buy a Mac application, we want to be able to give them a discount on our iPhone application, not a free copy, or even a free copy, because we could only give out 50 of those. Just all sorts of things that third-party developers are intimately familiar with, and Apple isn't, and over time is learning, clearly, and you know, implementing some of these things slowly. But the problem is that until you get there, until you get to the point where all these things work the way that they should, we're all stuck with it, because the App Store is the only way to release software.
Yeah.
So Paul, I mean, what's your sense? I mean, is this really just a learning curve, something Apple wasn't really prepared for the huge success? I mean, we've talked about it a little bit on this podcast, but I'd love to get your perspective, you know, just our thoughts and opinions. But, you know, are they listening to developers? Is it going to take more kind of actions and postings like you've done and like the guy at Facebook has done to kind of get Apple to wake up, you know, and maybe respond a little quicker to the stuff? Or are they, you know, in your mind moving okay? Or, you know, what's the sense of that?
Well, I mean, it depends on how I feel in the day, if I woke up on the right side of the bed or not. But
how about just not you, but I mean, you're closer to the developer community. Within the developer community, I mean, what's kind of the general sense, that this is totally broken and we're all going to have to leave eventually, or it's something that Apple's working through and they're listening to your guys' input? And I mean, typically I think they're fairly decent about that. I know, you know, back in the dark days they were pretty bad with developers, but I, you know, at least on the Mac side it seems like development's gotten a little bit better. Can they get this fixed? Are they going to get there someday?
Well, so I mean, the biggest thing for us is that it's been 18 months now, almost 18 months, and there are still things that are just so fundamentally broken. Again, shipping updates taking weeks. That's just something that to us is fundamentally broken and not a sound way to do it. Can they fix these things? Absolutely. I mean, they already have fixed things. They've made gradual improvements. Promo codes is a good example where things got better. It's not perfect, but it's certainly better than it was. Free applications being able to sell in-app content. That was a change that they made. When they originally shipped in-app content, they said free apps will remain free. You won't be able to sell content in them. And everyone said, well, you know, that's just silly. It doesn't make any sense. Are you really so concerned that customers are going to download something for free and then feel they got a bait and switch and suddenly have to pay for it? And if they do, what's the worst they have to do? They have to delete the application. So I think Apple heard that and realized, you know, hey, we could be making more money if all applications could sell content in there, inside of them, free or paid. So it's certainly something where we've seen improvements and seen things get better. But in the grand scheme of it, or you know, overall, personally, it still feels like there's a whole lot that's broken. From a developer perspective, you know, from the developer community, I mean, look, there's tens of thousands of developers on the iPhone. I know a few hundred probably at best. And most of them are still developing for the iPhone. So it's not something where they're saying, you know, we see that you're having a problem and so we're out too. There's still a whole lot of money to be made there if you get lucky, or, you know, if you have a popular app. So it's certainly not something where, you know, we're expecting dozens or hundreds of developers to make the same move away from the iPhone that we did. But I think there definitely is a recognition that things still are broken and things need to be fixed, and hopefully that they will be fixed. So it's sort of, you know, there's two sides to it. There's, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff that's broken and needs to be fixed. But on the other side, there's I don't even know how many devices there are now, but tens of millions of these devices out there, almost hundreds of millions of these devices in people's hands where you can instantly sell them an application. So it's pretty difficult to look at that and say, this is obviously broken, nobody's making any money, because that's not the case. I mean, plenty of developers are making plenty of money on this. So it's something where even if people recognize that there are problems, it's not necessarily enough to drive them away.
Sure. And yeah, and there are a lot of other problems that we've, of course, covered on the show before, right. You know, with the App Store and some developers, you know, losing money, and et cetera. But I guess the big question is, do you think that Apple, you know, being Apple, would they make such a big change as to allow applications outside of the App Store to go on, you know, to the iPhone? Do you think they would eventually come to that conclusion? Because it's kind of, you know, saying, you know, we messed up almost.
Well, I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, Apple can spin things pretty well.
Sure,
I think we know that. So suddenly the web apps become desktop apps or, you know, handheld apps. Suddenly you can make true applications for the iPhone. And that's, you know, that's just builds on top of web apps. That's not we screwed up. That's just here. It's even better now.
Right.
So again, you say, hey, if you want to get software quickly and you know, be sure of what you're getting, come right through the App Store. But even if you don't, you can get it somewhere else. And that's a pretty easy thing to spin. Would they do it? I don't know. I think the big question to me is, how well does this scale? I mean, it seems like it's already not scaling very well.
Yeah, right.
You can always hire people on and hire more reviewers. But, you know, with 100,000 applications and updates to those applications, you've got to have dozens of reviewers right now. And in a year or two, how much bigger is this going to be? I mean, we went from zero developers for the iPhone, or, you know, Apple plus Google. So, you know, two. Google in terms of the Maps application and a few other things. But basically Apple as the developer for the iPhone, to from last July to now, we've probably got, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 different developers, probably even more than that, having applications on the iPhone. So you went from zero to tens of thousands. And I think it's only increasing in pace, and the number of applications is increasing, and the growth is increasing. So how well does that scale over the next year to 5 years? And I think, I don't know, to me, the obvious answer is sort of what's been proposed, is a selective review process. And if you don't want to bother with it, or you know, if Apple wants to be more restrictive about it and allow far fewer applications in their exclusive app store, that'll work. And if you want to get through another way, that'll work as well. But yeah, I think, I don't know, will it happen? I certainly don't feel confident saying this has to happen. I think the system works well enough for Apple as it is.
Right.
But I think it's pretty obvious from just the myriad number of complaints about every sort of different problem that the system is not perfect and far from it. And I think allowing, you know, third-party applications to be installed another way is sort of a fix that sort of ends a whole lot of these problems. You know, it has its own issues, but I think it makes a whole lot of these problems just disappear in a flash. And I don't know, will Apple get to the point where they say, we really need to do this? I hope so, but, you know, I'm not confident, or, you know, 50% chance, 60% chance, certainly not any higher than that.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly hope that more developers, more high profile developers kind of follow in your footsteps, yours and Joe Hewitt's, you know, because it definitely sends a message. You know, I feel like Facebook is probably one of the, you know, most popular applications on the store of all
of
them. And, you know, a longtime Mac developer quitting the App Store also sends a big message too. You know, I think you mentioned in your blog post that, you know, someone who's actually a fan over at Apple, you know, said, hang on, you know, let me take a look at this, and tried to help you through it, because they, you know, they definitely know about you guys over at Apple. And
yeah, absolutely.
I feel like, you know, maybe we need to have one or two more of these high profile developers, you know, completely say, you know, we're finished pushing updates, no more applications, we'll just leave them on the store and until it gets better. You know, I feel like that's the best move. I think there were a lot of people who were kind of, you know, boycotting, quote unquote, the iPhone for a while, and saying, I'm not going to use my iPhone. And that may not have been the best move. I feel like this is, you know, definitely sends a bigger message to Apple than anything else. So I guess my question to you is, what would you like to see developers and or consumers do to try and, you know, add their voice to the mix about this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely right that if a few more big high profile developers realize that this isn't working for them, that certainly sends a message to Apple, and that's certainly a good thing. But I certainly would never ask a developer, you know, hey, you should abandon the iPhone because of these problems. If you're making money on the iPhone, continue to make money on the iPhone. That's, you know, good for you, and that's what you should do. For us, it was the fact that from a business perspective, as a business decision, it did not make sense to continue developing this software when we couldn't be sure we'd be able to ship it and that it would work the way that we wanted to. So I think, to other developers, I just say sort of realize the way that this works and realize that you're not assured of shipping any of your software. And there were certainly some developers who said, you know, oh, the system's working great. I'm making plenty of money and that's fine. But you need to realize that it's not working great for everybody. And someday it may be you that it's not working great for. And the way that the system's set up now, that Apple has all the control, means that if they decide that they don't like you anymore or they don't like your application anymore, you're just SOL. I mean, you're just out of luck. So I think from a developer perspective, it's just being aware of the issue and knowing what the problems are. As far as consumers go, I mean, I wouldn't even say, you know, ignore boycotting the iPhone itself, but I wouldn't even say ignore the App Store. I mean, if there's apps on there that you want, you should buy them. But again, be aware that developers can't do what they want to do for you and can't release the software that they want to for you. And, you know, make the request to Apple to let developers ship software that they want to outside of Apple's control.
Sure.
If enough consumers ask for that, Apple will realize that, hey, there is a demand for this, and there's a demand for Google Voice apps, and there's a demand for, you know, nudity on the iPhone. If you want a strip poker app, it's your iPhone. Why shouldn't you be allowed to have it? You know, if you want that, you should be allowed to do it. But if Apple doesn't want to approve it, that's fine. Apple doesn't have to align themselves with that. But preventing the customer themselves from doing it has always struck me as reaching too far. And I think if more and more customers realize that Apple's preventing them from doing things that they may wish to do and sort of become aware of that, that's sort of the beginning step to changing it.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that'll even allow for, you know, higher quality applications. You know, I was talking to Ken Case over at the Omni Group about OmniFocus on the iPhone just the other day, and he's helping me out with some issues that I've noticed. And, you know, even he's mentioned, you know, it would help so much more if we could do a bigger beta test, because they have, you know, the sneaky peeks of OmniFocus on the Mac. You're freely available to check out the beta versions, and if you find a problem, then you can let them know, because it, you know, everybody knows that it helps so much more to have more eyeballs on the software, because there are always going to be bugs.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I've been quietly putting together all the pieces while we've been talking.
And you have the solution?
No, but I have the answer.
Okay.
And the answer is that we are not going to see a multi-level approval system. And Apple is going to be just fine with that. And we'll see other big name developers drop off the map. And it's not going to bother Apple. Keep in mind that the App Store is not something that Apple ever wanted, and more specifically, Steve Jobs did not want. The whole thing with apps on the iPhone, remember how they pushed the web apps?
Yeah.
And said that's all we'd ever need? Okay, I think that's as far as Apple ever wanted to go. And the App Store coming together was a result of just extreme pressure. And so they finally relented and said that they would do it. And then it turned into a surprise success for them, and they're okay with that. But they're not going to let it go any farther than they absolutely have to. So the whole idea of giving up some of the control over these apps that are going onto the iPhone, I don't see that happening at all. And I think Apple is going to be just fine with other big name developers dropping off the map. And that's going to be an opportunity for Google and the Android platform. But in the end, I don't think it's going to be a major hindrance for Apple, simply because there are so many people that are happy to line up and write apps.
Well, Jeff, I'm gonna quickly say something, and then I know we have to wrap up because I think some of us have to take off. But I just wanted to say that, you know, if you look back at Apple's history, as far as like especially the Lisa and into the Macintosh history, they quickly realized that they need developers, they need applications,
oh, yes,
they need killer apps on there, and they even, you know, they know that still, you know, with the Macintosh, and when OS X hit, you know, it really got developers, you know, coming back to the platform. And that's what really makes a platform useful is, you know, having that killer app.
You're absolutely right.
And so I think they realize that they really need the developers, you know, they need them to be on their side.
Oh, yeah. But keep in mind, there is a point in history where Steve Jobs said that something to the effect of the worst thing or the worst thing from his perspective about creating a successful computing platform is that you have to have third-party developers. And my bastardization of what he said is absolutely horrible, but that's the sentiment. Now, that said, I would love to be completely wrong with my assessment. And I would like to see a system in place that makes it much easier for developers to get their products in and get them approved. I would like to see more transparency. I want to see a system that makes sense for developers and for customers and for Apple as well, because if it doesn't work for everyone, then it's not a good program. And I would like to see something where there's a lot more consistency in the way applications get approved or denied. And right now, I see that there's broken pieces just all over the place. And I hope that they all come together in a much more productive way and that happens really soon.
Me too.
Well,
absolutely.
It's funny, Jeff. I mean, you mentioned, because Paul mentioned this, and I think we need to let the listeners know, you know, I think a big part of this is the community giving feedback to Apple and telling them that we want this changed, whether it's writing a blog post like Paul did, you know, the developer community as well as just the user community. And a lot of people don't know where to go. And I always send them to Apple has a great feedback page, apple.com/feedback.
Yep.
Yes.
Where you can give feedback on any product. And so you just go there, you pick the product you want to give them feedback on, you know, iPhone, iPod Touch, and you just, you know, fill out the form and you give them your feedback. And they do, as far as I know, everything I've been told is that they do listen to that. And then there's also, you know, emailing Steve Jobs directly. I know, obviously, it goes through his assistant, I think, or probably actually a team of assistants,
team
I would imagine.
Assistants, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he does listen to those too. And that's the email I usually give people is sjobs@mac.com. It's probably me.com now, or I think even sjobs@apple.com works for that. So, you know, people should just write in and say, look, we want this change. And I'm firmly convinced that the web app to application thing, I think a big part of that was the community, the iPhone users saying, we want real apps. And I think Apple heard it from enough people. It's funny that you mentioned that you don't think Apple ever wanted to or still didn't want to do it. I always got the impression after Rubenstein left, since the web OS was the Palm OS, for some reason the web app thing was a Rubenstein idea. And it kind of went with him when he left Apple.
You know, that's possible. But if you're doing web apps, you're completely locking down what developers can do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so I think the community spoke up and they said, we want real apps. And I think that's partly the reason. I think it was always in that back of Apple's mind. But I think feedback and you know, getting out there and getting your voice heard can change these things. And I think it's probably the best way to go at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, also, I think that there is probably some behind-the-scenes things going on that we don't know about. And I would venture to say that the people at Apple that watch what's happening with the market were pretty sure that someone else was going to try and set up an App Store-type system at some point. So they decided to go ahead and give customers what they wanted in the form of the App Store and try and set it up in a way that they could control really well and present overall a good product to the customers. And so, you know, to that end, we end up with the App Store, and then Apple was able to jump the gun and get something out before Microsoft or Palm or RIM or whoever could get something in place. And so they were first to market with the whole thing, and they did it compared to what everyone else is doing, right, even though we know that there are still so many problems that have to be worked out.
Yep.
Okay, now right. I believe that Paul needs to get off and enjoy some time with his family, and so I will say that, well, thank you so much, first of all.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
For coming on. It really helps let everybody know what's going on. Paul Kafasis, is that right?
Yeah, you nailed it. There you go.
at Rogue Amoeba, rogueamoeba.com, and of course, twitter.com/pbones.
That's my personal account, which is mostly just full of inappropriate jokes. But
well, I noticed if you follow,
that's always a good time.
You follow all the good people on Twitter. I noticed that all the favored folks and all that.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Mostly the other people who are making inappropriate jokes.
Well, that's so. Me too. That's why I stopped recommending myself on the show. So,
Rogue Amoeba itself has a Twitter account, which is probably the more relevant one at this point.
Is it twitter.com/rogueamoeba?
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Paul. I'll let you take off.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And yeah, I hope the debate or, you know, the discussion enlightens some people. And hopefully in the next few months, by the end of the year, by the end of next year, we won't have quite so much to complain about.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping that something happens to make Apple fix so many of these things that are problems so that you feel comfortable writing for the iPhone again, because you create such awesome products. It's an absolute shame that we won't be seeing other things from you on the iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and certainly, you know, we absolutely agree in terms of we want to be on the platform, but we need it to be viable from a business perspective. And I think that's really the biggest message that will resonate with Apple is if it's not viable for businesses to develop for their platform, then they really will know they have a problem. So that was sort of one of the big focuses that we had. And certainly we're hopeful that it will be viable in the future.
Yep. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Paul.
Thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, and we have a pretty good show here going, so we're not going to ruin that by adding any more news to the mix. We're just going to move right on to our iPhone picks. But before we do that, I would like to mention that our sponsor this week is Mac About Town, and their application is in the App Store. You there. It's a free SMS application with style. And so the idea with you there is that instead of interrupting someone with a phone call, it allows you to send a special text message for them to respond to later. And the idea is that your friend, once they receive this text message, they can tap your phone number, which is right in there, and give you a call right back, or they can reply via your SMS or your AIM name, which is also in there. Or if they also have you there, they can also tap the special You There link and respond with that application. You There is available from Mac About Town. It's $3.99 in the App Store. And you can also find other great Mac About Town apps in there by searching for Mac About Town, such as Photo Timer and Sideways. And we thank Mac About Town for their sponsorship of the iPhone Alley podcast. So go check that out. And with that, let's do our iPhone picks. Adam, would you like to go first?
I knew you were going to come to me. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I had one and I couldn't remember if I've done it before, and I haven't had time to do the research to figure out if I've already recommended this one. So I am going to go with something I was playing around with today, being that we're getting close to Thanksgiving, and that time when we all want to eat some really good turkey or tofurkey, in your case, Michael.
I've never had tofurkey. I need to try that.
Well, the point is, or you could find something vegetarian for the holidays with this Epicurious. Have you guys tried out the Epicurious iPhone app?
No. Tell me more.
So tons of just really cool, great recipes. And I was going through some of the turkey recipes and just drooling. So what's really nice about the app is you kind of flip through. They have ratings. So people will rate, you know, one to four forks, I think. And then also whether or not they would make the recipe again. So if they've tried it out, they can put comments and things like that on there, say if they would make it again. And, you know, let's just see. We've got clementine salted turkey with red-eyed gravy, sage butter roasted turkey and cider gravy, cider glazed turkey. I mean, you just go through and they've got, you know, tons of turkey and holiday sides, and it looks like they've updated it just for the holidays. So it looks like it changes. I forget what kinds of things were on there when I first downloaded. Of course, you can search for recipes. You can add things to your favorites. But a nice feature is also you can add a recipe and create a shopping list. So it has a shopping list in there. You go in there, and it'll just tell you everything you need to pick up to make the recipes that you've put onto your list. So just a really nicely done app. It's got great images, and it's perfect if you're planning a holiday meal or any meal.
Boy, you know, that looks fantastic. It is free. It's Epicurious from Condé Nast, I believe. And the, you know, you're talking about all these applications. It makes me think I need more room. I need more app pages, or I need folders. You know, one of the great things that the Jailbreak guys get to do is they get to have folders on their home screens.
I think we'll see something like that eventually as an official part of the iPhone OS.
Yeah. Oh, and just as an example of good, so it's advertising supported. This app is advertising supported, and something nice that they did, I think as you're flipping through recipes, one thing is every couple recipes you do get an ad, so I'll just warn people about that, but hey, it's free. So, but the one thing, they had a sponsored section this time when I popped it open. They had beer and food duos sponsored by Stella, and I never know how to say the last part, Artois. Do you guys know that? Stella
beer? I don't know.
I just always call it Stella.
Yeah.
So anyway, good beer. And they have recipes with the different beers that the Stella distributor. So Hoegaarden beer, I think they also distribute, and some others. And they have recipes with that. So there's like Mussels cool. Hoegaarden. And so I just thought that was kind of cool. It's like, oh, it's beer and food pairings that actually sound really great. And it throws in the advertising in there. But it's really not offensive or noticeable.
And it looks like you can actually do the same kind of thing that the Whole Foods app Jeff mentioned a while ago let you do, which is kind of say, you know, I want something with chicken as the main ingredient, and I want it to be healthy, and I want it dinner, and then
that's true. Yeah,
just give it all those variables, and it'll kind of spit out. Is that what it does?
Yeah, you can give it the main ingredient you're looking for, or if you have any special dietary considerations, so you want it low fat or low sugar or low salt. Different types of cuisine. You have a bunch of different starting points when you're doing searching and things like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I think it also has drink recommendations as well, too.
Oh, great. that's a great pick.
I actually heard your eyes light up.
My eyes?
Yeah. I think it does drinks. Oh, great.
Oh boy. I can actually eat food with my drinks. That's cool. Okay. Jeff, what's your pick this week?
All right. I haven't done a game for a long time, so that's what I'm doing tonight.
All right.
And the game that I want to tell everyone about is Orbital. And it's like a 99-cent game. I think that's what it costs. But it's very simple. What you have is like this little cannon thing, and it just sweeps back and forth across your screen. And when you tap the screen, it fires like this little ball thing, and it can bounce off the sides, and where it stops is where it sits. And so you have to shoot a ball three times to blow it up. And the objective is to blow up as many balls as you can before one of them crosses a line that's near where your cannon is, and then you die. And it's very simple, but once you start playing it, then it becomes one of those things where you're going, okay, well, if I have the gravity on and I bounce a ball this way, the gravity of this ball that's here should arc it so I can hit this thing over here, and then I might be able to blow up like three other balls at once.
Oh, cool.
You know, so you work on the strategies. It's a very simple game, but it's also a game where you can really work on what you're doing with it. And it's not just like, okay, if I just tap the same pattern all the time, I can just keep racking up points and points and points.
Yeah, and it's got great graphics too.
Yeah, it's a really fun game, surprisingly fun. And I bought it because a few people had told me that it's cool, but no one had told me just how really, really cool it is once you start playing it.
Yeah, it's actually on sale right now for 99 cents.
Yeah.
So go check it out. It's called Orbital.
Yeah, and once you start playing it, everyone that goes and downloads it, pretty soon you're going to get pissed off at me because you're going to be playing it a lot.
Excellent.
And you will die a lot right away.
Cool. All right, so my pick is an application that it's actually been in the App Store for quite a while. It's been in there since September 1st, it looked like. And when I first came across it a couple days ago, it didn't have any reviews or anything like that, and I hadn't heard anything about it. And it really surprised me because when I played it, it was so much fun. And the game is called Air Tennis, and what it allows you to do is between two different iPhones, or you could use an iPod Touch, you can pair over Bluetooth, and you play with a friend. You play virtual tennis with a friend, and the idea is you don't need to really look at your phone. It's more of an audio kind of game, because you know once you've linked up, you look down at your phone, and you know whether or not you're the person serving. It'll tell you that right there. So you serve the ball, and then it'll go back and forth. You'll actually hear the ball coming towards you, and right when it gets to that point where it's close to you, it'll tell you which kind of swing to use to actually hit the ball, and you have to do that swing properly and at the right time. And if you do that correctly, it goes back to the other person, and then they get an indication of which swing to use, and you swing your iPhone in the correct manner, and it goes back to them, and you go back and forth like a normal tennis match, and except it's on your iPhone, and it's very Wii-like, and it's so much fun. And that moment where we did it a couple times back and forth, and it didn't work out too well, and you get really good at it as you play. And so there was a point where we were going back and forth, and 10 times back and forth, and you get really into it. And it's only 99 cents, so it's perfect for the two player kind of genre of game, because it's not like a $5 game where you have to trick your friend into buying a $5 game to try out something that may or may not be a lot of fun. But at 99 cents, I don't know why everybody doesn't just kind of have this on their phone. So as soon as you see another person with an iPhone, you say, hey, let's play some tennis. So Jeff, I know I told you about it. Did you get a chance to check it out yet?
Not yet.
It's so much fun. I just, we tried it at the office, and then we went to a friend's house the next night, and Ed Kirk was there, one of the guys who writes for iPhone Alley, and he said, hey, get this on your phone right now. And we started going back and forth in the kitchen, and everybody gathered around, and everybody wanted to try it. It was a lot of fun. So it's called Air Tennis, and it's by I think it's called by Unit 9, if I'm not mistaken. It's 99 cents, and it works very well, so go check that out.
I'm so disappointed. I thought you were going to recommend the It's Britney, the official Britney Spears app.
I know. I really was going to, and
You can be K-fed, be a Britney dancer.
Okay.
Put your photo
tell
in
me.
There.
Tell me more about this, because I have not heard about this. This sounds horrible.
It's a featured app on the iTunes Store. It's right there on the homepage.
Which is why I don't really pay attention to that stuff.
I just popped on there and I saw this. This is horrible. It's $1.99. I'm sure we're going to get email from Britney fans. So just say.
Oh, I see it. It's Britney.
Yeah. You can put your face in there.
Oh, my goodness.
You get free. It's got the Twitter stream in there. It has a sparkler, so you can hold it up at her concert. The sparkler.
Oh, boy. Nice. Oh, no. People actually pay for this, and it's only got one star review. The rest are 50. The rest are 5-star reviews.
Britney fans are strong. Like I'm saying, we're going to get some emails, so I'm prepared for it. Well, you get it. So that's why I like to bring this stuff up on your show, not mine.
Well, if we have any Britney fans on the show, sure, let us know. If you're actually irritated by us making fun of this, then let us know, because my guess is we don't have that many Britney fans.
I haven't seen the demographics, so it could be that we're really big with the Britney crowd.
We could skew like far to the Britney side of things, which would
and
surprise
if
me.
That's the case, we could probably get Britney on as a guest.
Yeah. Yeah, and she would come to your house, right, Jeff?
Yeah, no good can come of that.
All right. And with that, I will say that in our podcast marketplace this month is, of course, You There from Mac About Town, and one free audiobook from Audible at audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. And I heard this recently, you know, someone say, you know, if you haven't tried Audible yet, it's a free book. You just got to try it. You know, if you have to sign up with your credit card, but you can cancel. I think it's the first 14 days, Adam.
Yep. You got 14 days to try it out.
And the great thing is you get to keep the book.
Yeah. You're not going to want to cancel, though. I love Audible. I've been an Audible fan since before they started sponsoring my show. And like I just listened to the Neil Gaiman Graveyard book, the Graveyard book, which is an awesome book. And so often they have the artist read the book or the author read the book. And I think it was the case for the Graveyard book. And it's just great.
Did you ever read the John Hodgman book? I know there was the first one.
No, I listened to the Audible version.
And I say read.
My expertise. It's awesome with
Jonathan Coulton.
And yeah, it's great.
Has the second book come out on Audible yet?
I believe so. Yeah, I haven't picked it up yet. But that's the other nice thing is once you're in the subscription, your credits build up. So I have like 6 credits in there. So I just go on like little buying sprees when I'm getting ready to go on a trip or something like that. And then I load up.
Yeah. Go check it out. audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. You can go to iPhoneAlley.com for more tips, news and reviews. You can share information. If you find something cool that you want to share with everybody on your iPhone, go ahead and hit the contact link on the side of the page. And if you want to look at our iPhone picks, go check that out at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. You get the show notes there as well. And you can send feedback to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com if you're a Britney fan. And you can get a hold of Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer and iPod Observer, twitter.com/jgamet. Thank you so much for being here, Jeff.
Hey, sure thing. It's always a blast.
And Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and twitter.com/MacCast. And, I almost forgot. We're nominated for a podcast award, so voting has started. You can vote every single day, right?
Yes, once a day. Please vote once a day.
Podcastawards.com. You can vote for iPhone LA Podcast. Also vote for Adam's show. And
MacCast, we're in separate categories, thank goodness. Yeah. So you can vote for both of us.
Yeah. And oh, then everyone, go vote early and vote often.
Yes. And iPhone LA. There's
tons of other great podcasts in there, too. I just want to mention lots of them that I listen to. So also pick your favorites. I mean, make sure you pick all your favorite podcasts because it does make a difference to us.
And iPhone Alley's Twitter is twitter.com/iPhone. Well, twitter.com/iPhone Alley. I wish we got twitter.com/iPhone. That'd be nice. But the air raid siren outside was kind of distracting me from saying that correctly. Did that come through?
Yes, it's 7 o'clock. I didn't hear it, but 7 o'clock.
Yeah, you totally got it.
Going.
Okay, great. Well, and with that, another iPhone Alley podcast is in the can. All right, it is time for the iPhone Alley podcast, the show I'm going to start over again.
I know, I say you leave that in.
Really?
And all this. All this, too.
Yeah. We'll put this at the end of the show.
It's the show that does something. We talk about iPhones and iPods and all that kind of stuff.
I'm not leaving this in.
Come on.
Stylus, right? No.
We're going to use a stylus. No. Who wants a stylus? Stylus. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. No. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. 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 Yuck.
Made on a Mac, motherfucker.